This is Latter Day Radio. I'm Greg Girard. I'm here with Jonathan Neville. And we talked the last two segments about how he came to his theory that the Book of Mormon took place in the upper Midwest and described to us what was in letter 7 and why that's so significant. Now, Jonathan, at some point you realized, hey, there's only one Hill Cumorah, there's not two. You've actually written some books about it.
When I first read letter 7, and then I read the other 7 letters, a total of 8 letters, I realized that they were written in a kind of a 19th century style, which is convoluted sentences, long sentences, that audiences today just don't relate to, even though the content is phenomenal. And so I thought, in order for people to appreciate these, they needed some context for it. And so I wrote some introductory chapters to explain the historical context, and then I have a little introduction to each letter to explain, you know, what the gist of it was, what he was trying to get at, why he was saying what he was saying. I also have a section in there that highlights important segments or excerpts from each letter. And that, I think, helps people to read these letters with more appreciation and to get more meaning out of them. That's why I wrote a little book about it. But I also have a web page where I have a lot of this information you can go to. It's just letter7.com.
And what's your web page address?
It's letterviivii.com.
Letter 7 with Roman numerals.
Exactly, yeah. And so people can go there. There's a direct link to the Joseph Smith papers there. They can read these letters themselves. There's lots of more historical context there. It's kind of my church history webpage.
I see. Okay, talk to us about this about the hill.
Okay.
You're one hill guy, as Rod likes to describe himself.
Right. Yeah, exactly. When you read letter 7, I mean, everybody who reads letter 7 and believes Oliver Cowdery and Joseph Smith, because Joseph helped him write these letters, accepts the one hill in Cumorah, in New York. One hill Cumorah in New York. And as you start thinking about it, you read the analysis of the scholars at CES and BYU who are promoting this idea of two Cumorahs, it becomes less and less plausible. There's one Cumorah in New York, if you believe the prophets. And the interesting thing is, it wasn't just Oliver Cowdery who said this. Brigham Young, Wilford Woodruff, and Heber C. Kimball all talked about Oliver's visit to the depository in the Hill Cumorah in New York. But since then, many of the other prophets and apostles have talked about it, including in General Conference. As a really good example is President Marion G. Romney spoke about this in the October of 1975 General Conference in a talk called America's Destiny, where he talked about standing on the Hill Cumorah in New York, looking over the battlefields, and how the importance of knowing where those took place in terms of America's destiny today.
Yeah, that's one thing Rod talked about on our first broadcast, that there were promises made to the people of this land, a covenant people, mm-hmm. and if they didn't keep their part of the covenant, then there were bad things that were going
that's
to happen.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And so it's really more than just a semantic debate about, you know, where the Hill Cumorah is. It, for me, it boils down to a question of whether we accept the teachings of the prophets or not. And this is why it's a concern for me, because it's a slippery slope. If, you know, down at BYU, all the incoming freshmen are given what I call an abstract map or a fantasy map of Book of Mormon lands that shows Cumorah is not in New York. And any of those students who know what the prophets have taught know that they're being told the prophets were wrong about this. President Benson even made a comment in General Conference where he said the intellectuals, when they disagree with the prophets about any topic, they'll say, well, that's just that prophet's opinion. It's the opinions of man. And that's exactly what these BYU professors are doing about the Hill Cumorah. They're telling the students that Oliver Cowdery and all the prophets who have corroborated what he said about the Hill Cumorah in New York are just expressing their opinions, and they're wrong. When you tell students that, it's easy to see how that impacts their life, because it gives them license to disagree with what the prophets teach about any topic. That's why President Benson called them out on doing this very thing.
It's a wedge. It starts off as a sliver.
Right.
We hope to have Michael Ash on here to talk about shaken faith syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And things get blown out of proportion on the World Wide Web. Things are spread all over the internet. So we want to go back to the basics and rely on the fundamentals, don't we?
Right, exactly. When the prophets have been this explicit about the New York Camorra, to have a faction within the church, primarily among the intellectuals, that's telling everybody that they're wrong is very destructive, in my opinion. And the problem is, it's what I call the academic cycle. These intellectuals have focused on the Central American theory for so long, even though it was based on a mistake in church history, as we talked about in the Times and Seasons. They focused on it for so long that they've convinced themselves that's what happened. And then because they're aware of Letter 7, but they never tell their students or their readers about it, they find it out on their own. But the intellectuals never talk about it because they recognize the cognitive dissonance that it produces, where students see exactly what the prophets have said, and then they have their own teachers at BYU and in CES telling them that was wrong. That's a disastrous outcome. Well, what makes it worse is the professors teach the students. The students go on to their jobs after they graduate. Many of them work for the church. Most of the people in the church office building graduated from BYU or at least through CES somehow. And they all have been taught this Central American idea. They create artwork, media, lesson manuals, displays in the visitor center that all reflect their belief in the Central American theory. And I've talked to some of them who have never even heard of Letter 7. They had no idea the prophets have ever specifically said Camorra's in New York. Nevertheless, they've created all this art material. If you go to the visitor center, I encourage people to go to the visitor center, the North Visitor Center on Temple Square, go in the basement and look at the display. They have Mormon compiling or abridging the Nephite records in a cave in Central America. It has Mayan glyphs all over it, the whole thing. And then off in the distance is Moroni bearing the plates in upstate New York. They're teaching this two Camorras theory right on Temple Square. And what that tells people who know what the prophets have taught is that the prophets were wrong. In reality, it's the employees who created those exhibits who are wrong, in my opinion. And I think it's important for members of the church to learn what the prophets have taught about this and then choose. You can choose between the scholars or the prophets. But there's a sharp difference between the two that people don't realize because they don't know what the prophets have taught.
Now, I did get an email a week or two ago from a brother who noted that, and he asked me the question, are you creating a schism in the church by presenting this other theory? And my answer was, no, because they're still all theories. We don't know exactly where Helaman's tower was, and when he heard the people speaking below him and he was distressed by it. That was, for me, by the way, a moment of personal testimony about the Book of Mormon, because I felt the pain that Helaman was experiencing when he overheard a conversation below the tower where he was sitting. I don't know for sure whether that tower was in Columbus, Ohio, or that was in Columbia. But I think and the reason that we're broadcasting this here on Latter-day Radio is we want people to do some of their own research and to get their own witness by opening up the book and reading it. And I think that's really the focus here. Are people reading the scriptures? The Book of Mormon is true. We all agree about that. That's the testimony that is reinforced again and again. I suggest if anybody has any concerns at all, go listen once again, as I've done about 25 or 30 times, to Elder Holland's 2009 October conference talk on safety for the soul. I can tell you, I can hardly watch that conference talk without tears streaming down my eyes, as Elder Holland said, talking about Joseph and Hiram before they were going back to Carthage, where Hiram read a piece out of Ether. And then he said, I have in my hand that very book from which Hiram read to his brother. And he said, if this book were not the word of God, they would be blaspheming God. And then he said, emphatically, they would not do that. the Book of Mormon is true in all of our minds, whether we're at BYU or whether they're here with Jonathan and me. So if you're wondering, just go back and read the book.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you said. The way I frame this is the prophets have consistently and persistently over decades taught two things. Number one is the Hill Cumorah is in New York. Number two is we don't know where the rest of the events took place. And that makes perfect sense. We know Cumorah's in New York because Oliver and the others have told us, but there are literally thousands of potential sites for Book of Mormon named sites in the archaeology. In North America alone, recent non-Mormon estimates are there are over 1 million mound sites, for example. How can you choose the maybe 100 sites named in the Book of Mormon among 1 million sites? There's just so many possible sites that the brethren have never been able or never been willing to identify a particular site as a Nephite site other than the Hill Cumorah. And that makes perfect sense. So it's incumbent on us as members of the church to take what the prophets have said, combine it with our own study, and come up with what we feel is most plausible or most comfortable for us. What the prophets have never told us to do is to reject what the prophets have taught. And none of the brethren have ever repudiated, even questioned, what Oliver Cowdery wrote in Letter 7. The only people who have done that are these intellectuals. And that's why it's a choice between the prophets and the intellectuals, the way I look at it. But definitely, you know, the more I've studied about Book of Mormon geography and historicity, the stronger my testimony has become that it is the Word of God, it's literally true, it's the story of real people that lived in a real place and testified of Christ.
For faithful Latter-day Saints who accept the Book of Mormon as the Word of God, translated by means of His power, the book is indeed a second witness of Christ, testifying of His divine mission and His role as our mediator. I, for one, am grateful to scholars, whoever they are, who are seeking confirmation about the truthfulness of the Book of Mormon and where those events may have taken place, regardless of their conclusions, because I believe there is ample evidence around the globe of Jesus Christ taking an active interest in our welfare and leading us back to our Father. So what if they don't agree? My advice, keep looking. There's more evidence coming here on Latter-day Radio too. So stay tuned to 1430 KLO World Class Talk. We'll be back here after the break with more from Jonathan Neville.